It's 5:30. This is MPBN. I'm Nora Flaherty. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, the jury's deliberating now. Actually, they've come back in the case against a Freeport man accused of defaming the founder of an orphanage in Haiti. The man said he sexually abused children. We'll find out more in a moment. And we'll look at who is and isn't getting big raises in Augusta. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. It's 5:32. I'm Nora Flaherty with this check of Main News. Recreational fishing is having a big impact on the New England and U.S. economies, according to a new report. Tom Porter has more.
2 months ago, the EPA finalized a provision of the Clean Water Act, extending its protections to the smaller streams and wetlands that form the foundation of the nation's water resources. The National Wildlife Federation polled 1,000 registered voters across the political spectrum who identify as hunters and anglers. 83% of them supported the revised act. In the Northeast, that figure was 86%. Judy Burke is with the Natural Resources Council of Maine.
We want to obviously ensure that Maine's congressional delegation is aware of the strong support of sportsmen, particularly for this rule and for making sure the habitat is protected.
Not everyone's a fan of the new rule, however. Last month, 16 states, most of them in the western U.S., filed suit to try and block the measure, arguing it gives the federal government too much power. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Several Maine not-for-profit organizations will receive thousands of dollars from the state. The money comes from state contingent account funds. The governor typically distributes what's left of the fund at the end of the fiscal year to organizations around Maine. The My Place Teen Center in Westbrook is a free year-round after-school program focusing on at-risk kids. It's receiving $50,000. Donna Dwyer is president and CEO of My Place. She says financial insecurity is a big problem for the organization.
We're free. We're open 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, year-round, plus meals we serve to the kids. And to know that we live month to month, just like our kids do, is pretty scary.
She says knowing the organization has the money will really help. Several other organizations that will get contingent account money from the state include House in the Woods, which offers outdoor retreats for veterans and their families, Challenger Learning Center, Highland Senior Center, Easter Seals, and the Maine NASCAR race car. And a Maine lobsterman has caught a rare bright orange lobster. It's the second time he's pulled an odd-colored lobster from state waters. Bill Coppersmith of Wyndham tells the Portland Press-Herald he was out on the Gulf of Maine yesterday when he caught the orange lobster. Coppersmith has named the lobster Captain Eli after his four-year-old grandson. In weather tonight, lingering showers in the north and west, clearing in the rest of the state with lows in the 50s. This is MPBN Radio. It's 25 minutes before 6. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty. The case against a Freeport man accused of defaming the founder of a Haitian orphanage of sexual abuse has apparently come to a close this evening as the jury has returned from deliberations. Our reporter Patty White's in the courtroom right now waiting for the verdict, and she can't use her phone from there, so we'll let you know as soon as we do. But Patty joined me a few minutes ago to talk about the case and the closing arguments. I asked her to refresh us on the case itself.
Sure. So Michael Geilenfeld is the founder of an orphanage in Haiti, and he's suing Paul Kendrick of Freeport for defamation. Geilenfeld says that since 2011, Kendrick has endlessly bullied and harassed him by sending hundreds of emails to third parties that allege that Geilenfeld molested boys at his orphanage. And a charity called Hearts with Haiti is also suing Kendrick. They raise money for Geilenfeld's orphanage, and they say that his email campaign cost them $2 million in lost donations.
So after 3 weeks of trial, the 10 jurors are deliberating now. What do they need to consider when they're reaching a verdict on this?
So Judge John Woodcock gave the jury a number of criteria to consider. And he said to find Paul Kendrick guilty of defamation, they have to determine that the plaintiffs presented clear and convincing evidence that he, one, made one or more false statements against Geilenfeld and Hearts with Haiti, that he published those statements to a third party, that Kendrick knew that the statements were false or acted with reckless disregard of whether the statements were false, and that the publication of those statements caused significant harm to Geilenfeld and Hearts with Haiti's reputations.
So that's a pretty high threshold to find Kendrick guilty of defamation. What did the lawyers have to say in closing arguments?
Well, Michael Geilenfeld's lawyer, Peter DeTroy, says that the email campaign that Kendrick launched against his client is a modern-day equivalent of the Salem witch trials. And DeTroy reminded jurors that Kendrick sent out contradictory emails. He would send out one that claimed that Guilenfeld was raping innocent children, and then within a day, he sent another email to a colleague saying that he didn't have enough information on the claims against Guilenfeld. Detroit also reminded jurors that Guilenfeld has been cleared of multiple allegations of sexual abuse, including an investigation by the Department of Homeland Security. And he says that Kendrick's campaign has caused significant harm to Guilenfeld. He was held in a Haitian jail for 237 days.
Okay, so this all sounds pretty dramatic. Can you just tell me a little bit more about the picture that the plaintiff lawyers are painting of Mr. Kendrick?
Sure. So Peter Detroit, in his closing arguments, described Paul Kendrick as a cyberbully and that he became the prosecutor, judge, and jury in these allegations against Michael Guilenfeld. And Detroit said that basically it's too easy to destroy someone's reputation in this day and age with computers and social media and email. It's just too easy, he said, to be unkind and to attack and to damage someone's reputation irreparably.
Now, we do know that Kendrick has been a vocal advocate for victims of sexual abuse ever since the Catholic priest scandal. What did his lawyer have to say to the jury in closing?
Well, David Walker pointed out that seven alleged abuse victims testified against Guilenfeld, and that unless the jurors believe that each and every one of them is lying, the case is over. In terms of the sexual abuse allegations against Guilenfeld over the years, he said that plaintiffs would have the jury believe that it was a 30-year conspiracy. He said that when Guilenfeld was released from the Haitian jail recently, it was after a 45-minute trial where no witnesses testified. And Walker also said that Hearts with Haiti has had some of its best fundraising years ever since Kendrick's emails began in 2011.
Okay, Patty, we will keep an eye on the case and check in again when there's a verdict. Do you know when that's going to be?
It could come at any time. It could be this evening. It could be tomorrow. It could extend into next week, possibly.
Okay, thanks, Patty.
Thanks.
And, of course, we will check back in when that happens. Some of the top managers in the LePage administration are getting a pay raise this month as part of an effort that the governor says is designed to maintain what he refers to as pay parity with top legislative staffers. The 12 cabinet members will now make nearly $128,000 a year after receiving raises of between 7 and 23%. Meanwhile, Democratic leaders say LePage should extend his generosity to the thousands of Maine state employees that report to those same department heads. A.J. Higgins has more.
In a state with an average median income of about $42,000, $128,000 is a pretty good salary. But the governor's staff points out that such paychecks are not out of line when compared with some New England states and still far lower than some others. As first reported in the Portland Press Herald, the raises handed out by the governor were more generous to some commissioners than others. Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew, who was already earning $118,000, got a raise of more than $9,000, while Richard Rosen, the governor's commissioner of finance, saw his $103,000 salary increase by more than $24,000. And while the LePage administration argues that it's just keeping pace with some legislative staff salaries that have surpassed $120,000, some Democrats, including Democratic House Majority Leader Jeff McCabe, are taking issue.
People just can't understand this. You know, this is a governor who claims to be for smaller government, and he just gave raises that puts Maine on top in as far as salary for folks doing positions where in states similar to Maine. They're making much less.
In neighboring New Hampshire, which is similar in population to Maine, the DHHS commissioner earns nearly $124,000 and the Department of Public Safety commissioner just over $121,000. Other Granite State commissioners are just breaking $100,000. Vermont's commissioners earn from $98,000 to $123,000, while Massachusetts state agency commissioners' salaries range from $135,000 to $227,000. Still, McCabe says he can't understand how the governor rationalizes a 23% pay hike for a cabinet member. And while the governor has chosen to make legislative staff's salary an issue, McCabe says those salaries can be justified.
For us in the legislature, when we're doing salary or when we're doing increases in raises and things, it's usually based on experience, years of service. So, the fact is these are people who are coming to work in state government There is quite an expensive benefit package for these commissioners.
The governor's communications office says the salaries for members of the LePage cabinet are competitive, and that in some cases, commissioners like Mary Mayhew oversee an array of services that are routinely divided between two cabinet posts in other states. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Let's check in now on the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
A touchy weather pattern is in place through Saturday, but by no means a washout. Showers, however, cannot be avoided any day. And those showers will linger over the mountains in the county tonight, while clouds scatter out south of Bethel, Bangor, and Lubeck, 50 statewide. Tomorrow, a similar scenario with even less sunshine, mostly cloudy with showers, scattered afternoon thunderstorms, some of which could generate gusty winds and small hail, least widespread Portland south, low 60s north, mid-70s south. Saturday a bit brighter. Expect varying amounts of sunshine, brightest along the coast. Isolated showers will pop up throughout the interior. Upper 60s north, mid-70s south, 65 to 70 at the beaches. Sunday soggy with coastal fog. Showers throughout the state, perhaps some isolated thunder over the mountains. 70 to 77, 60s at the coast. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And finally today, whitewater canoeists and kayakers from across the country are in Maine for a competition event that could not have been possible just 3 years ago. The Penobscot River Whitewater Nationals Regatta got underway in Old Town today, with races scheduled to take place through Sunday afternoon. As Jay Field reports, the competition hosted by the Penobscot Nation represents another milestone in the long-term effort to restore New England's second-largest river system.
I'm standing on a little spit of land on the bank of the Penobscot River in Bradley. A bald eagle is soaring overhead, and if you look upstream, you can see the remnants of the Great Works Dam. Construction crews began removing the dam 3 years ago as part of the Penobscot River restoration, and now sea-run fish are free to swim upstream, and kayakers and canoeists can ride the rapids where the dam once stood.
Great Works is the one you're going to want to look at.
That's the first.
The best thing is to go down here to the light, take a left, go across the bridge.
Yeah.
Actually, go across two bridges. Right after the gas station, there's a light, turn right.
Scott Phillips is telling some canoeists from Connecticut how to get to the spot where I was just standing. The men are competing in this weekend's Penobscot River Whitewater Nationals Regatta and want to size up the rapids from shore before a test run. The Penobscot Indian Nation is hosting the event. Phillips, a member of the tribe, is race chair.
When you look at this river, this was and is the home of the Penobscot Indian Nation for thousands and thousands of years.
Phillips notes the journey of Chief Bashebes, the first documented head of the Penobscots, who famously canoed from Indian Island to Brewer to meet with the French explorer Samuel de Champlain. The river continued to be an important travel route for tribal members who paddled it in birch bark canoes until dams began bottling up the waterway in the early 1800s.
We're here to race and to compete, but we're also here just to be thankful and celebrate, you know, the restoration of the river after we took the dams out.
A day before the races begin, some of the roughly 150 paddlers expected this weekend are getting their canoes ready for trial runs through the rapids.
This is a 16-foot Old Town Penobscot. Got a seat in the center here.
Tim Lewis, one of those guys from Connecticut, is racing his bright red boat in the Open Canoe, or OC1 division.
We just finished scouting out the biggest rapid down below here.
His buddy, Rich Weber, brought along a pair of binoculars to get a real take on the rapids.
They always look smaller from the top or from a distance. When you get in them, they look a lot bigger. What we're doing today is we're looking for the best route.
Out on the water, the canoes from Connecticut approach the site where the Great Works Dam once stood. Whitewater now churns around the few remaining stanchions and nearby boulders, creating an obstacle course for canoes and kayaks. Dick Kelly, a paddler from Brewer, has come down to the bank to take a look.
You want to pay attention, you know, that it's a combination of being able to keep the fast lines and to try to keep your boat out of the waves so that you don't take water in. That'll slow you down and make it harder to maneuver through the waves.
The first Connecticut canoeist weaves his way through the rapids, shifting his paddle from one hand to the other to prevent the water from turning his boat sideways. a position no whitewater paddler wants to be in. What do you need to do to win?
Paddle fast and stay dry.
A few hours later, paddlers form a wide circle for the opening ceremony at a park by the river's edge in Old Town. Tribal elder Butch Phillips circles the fire, conducting a traditional Penobscot smudge ceremony. The Penobscot River Whitewater Nationals Regatta runs through Sunday. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And this just in, a Portland jury has ruled in favor of Haiti orphanage founder Michael Geilenfeld in his defamation lawsuit against Freeport activist Paul Kendrick. The jury's recommended that Geilenfeld be awarded $7 million in damages and that a related North Carolina-based charity known as Hearts of Haiti be awarded $7.5 million in damages. We will have more on this story as it develops. And that's Main Things Considered for today. Thanks to Tom Porter, Mal Leary, Susan Sharon, and Barbara Caridi. Especially also thanks to Patty White. I'm Nora Flaherty.